Welcome to Michigan Hockey Cast 4.5, where try as we might, we will never understand the game time decisions. So this is the second week in a row that we've just talked about football for the better part of an hour before actually doing the podcast.
Yeah, I don't know why we do that, but
I mean, part of it is like, you know, when you were in town, we would hang out and we talk about stuff. And now that you're out of town, you know, we usually talk once, maybe twice a week. And so now we're catching up on it. But also, like, there was a lot of things to say and we just get excited, I guess.
Yeah, a lot of things happened. Also, this week, football and hockey will be going on concurrently.
Why? I have many things to say about that, and none of them are positive.
The Indiana night game is a disgrace.
I just have nothing good to say about that. It, like, they had a night game against Minnesota a few years ago that was like in the rain and it was cold and it wasn't really planned, and like it was, well, I mean, it was planned, but it was
okay.
Just,
we litigated this, didn't we? That it started later than it was initially.
It was an hour. I looked it up.
The rain. Okay,
it was like an hour, but yeah. It was like a 6 o'clock game that started at like 7:15 or something like that. But that's not a game. Minnesota was terrible that year. Michigan was only okay, and it was just. Like, this game is going to be a pretty good Michigan team against an Indiana team that has not met preseason expectations, I think, to say the least. And then to put it, you know, I know that hockey isn't the biggest thing in the world, but, like, I don't know. I wish that the program would be like, oh, we'll play at 3:30 at least so that we can at least get home and watch the hockey game of supposedly our best hockey team in the country, which is another debate. But, yeah, so you got off on that. I was going to talk about it. I did want to bring in another starter that we had, is that our good friend Peter from the press box came over to me and he brought up an interesting idea. Brian has said for years that they should make the goal wider. And so there's like this talk about in hockey about, are there enough goals scored and is the goal wide enough? So Peter says, keep the height the same, keep the crossbar the same width, but widen the bottom of the net by like 6 inches on either side and turn it into a trapezoid. And then you'd have more people shooting low at better, you know, you keep the puck on the ice instead of having pucks going high and wide all the time because the better angles would be shooting low. What I thought it was intriguing. I don't know that they should do that, but you are the hockey expert, at least in these parts. So what say you?
I mean, number one, we have to decide whether there are not enough goals. Like, that's already one debate, but
sure.
You know, you could give it a shot. I mean, I'm not really sure why shooting on the ice is more desirable than like shooting up high, and just like as a theoretical concept, right? Like, in theory, you could make it an upside down trapezoid where like it goes up and it's like
people, you know, skate around the net and hit it and like get knocked out by this high corner.
I mean, it could be a circle. I mean, you know, you could do this for a lot of
this
different
is great.
What ifs, like what different shapes can we make the net?
What if you had to, what if each team had a different shape net?
It's kind of like how you can just, you know, make the grass longer, right? Or mess with the ice quality like we talked about last week.
Man, so Seth confirmed my theory.
Yeah, that was the thing that was on MGO Radio that people hear about.
I was like half joking about it. I mean, not really, because I could believe that teams would do that. Why wouldn't you? But I was like, that seems pretty conspiratorial. And then he calls his brother afterwards, and the guy's like, yeah, we do that routinely. Like, what? Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway,
so do you think the net needs to change, or are you good with it?
I could be in for a slightly larger net just because the goalies keep getting bigger than they used to be. Like, that's another issue, is that like Grant Fuhr was 5'9" and now Eric Portillo was 6'8". So maybe it just needs to get taller. I'm not exactly sure, but I can see that argument. I just don't know why it needs to be that shape.
I think Brian said the like widen it by the width of the post on either side. That way every post is a goal.
Well, you could just have Shaq as your goalie, right? And then like just like get a wider goalie to cover a wider net.
Did you see the opening thing, the opening night on NHL? I think it was on TNT, where they brought in Barkley and Wayne Gretzky was shooting at him.
And that was definitely a thing.
And Gretzky like guaranteed that he would score every time, and he missed one. And Barkley was like over the moon about it.
Yeah, well, Barkley is like really big, and that wasn't a very big goal that they were having him defend. That was very strange. Kind of weird. The other night, the Sportsnet Oilers broadcast interviewed Gretzky, but like in the tunnel of the rink, like they just found him. Like,
why was he there?
I don't know.
Went to a game.
Well, I would assume there was an event going on if he was back in Edmonton.
Okay.
But it was just a strange, like they didn't bring him into the broadcast booth or find him in a suite. He's like in the tunnel, like where there's just like buses, you know, hockey
bags.
It's
like talking to the Zamboni guy. Yeah. Like, hey, do you think that you're going to be the next goalie if this guy gets hurt?
It just was very strange that they found him of all people, just like here he is on the street. We just happened to run into him and now we're it was odd.
Hey, when you're a sideline reporter, you got to be ready for pretty much anything.
Hey, the Oilers are a juggernaut, though. That's what our hot takes of the first eight games are. Zach Hyman fitting in very well for some Michigan content. But
yeah, but you weren't surprised about that. I mean, you skate on that line and you probably get a few goals.
Well, sure. But Hyman, that was a good signing for right now. Not a good signing.
But that wasn't the question, right? It was just...
Here's a good thing to remember about pro sports. The GM never thinks about the long term because unless the
he
GM
won't be
is,
there.
Yeah.
All right.
It is correct. Yes.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. Let's get to the Thursday game because it's a Thursday Friday series, which I like. The football part of me likes. I don't like it that it's another day that we have to like do things because it's just, you know, usually you have Thursday where you can watch Sunday night football or Thursday night football or whatever and hang out. But so Michigan plays on Thursday and they play Wisconsin, who we previewed going in thinking this is one of the teams that's fighting to be at the bottom of the Big Ten. And the first period looked like that, despite there being no score. I think you texted me something like, well, I give Michigan XG of 2.7 goals.
Yeah, you calculate expected goals by basically taking historical models of what the percentages are that someone scores at that point on the ice. And I don't have access to any of that data, but me just assessing that from watching it, it was a massacre, especially
well,
the last like 6 minutes where Michigan is just in the zone the entire time and just firing away over and over and over again. And they end up with like 21 shots in the first period.
Yeah. It was like 17, 20 to six or something. It was just a little bit of what we expected. They got a power play, didn't really get anything that was like an amazing look, but they got a number of shots, just kind of like everything else. There was, they picked, I think I had written down that Pasta and Brisson had a nice little play picking Wisconsin in the zone and creating a good chance. And even good friend Luke Morgan goes coast to coast and dishes the puck to Dylan Duke, who has a pretty good chance. Morgan gets the rebound and hits Jared Moe in the pads. Poor Luke Morgan. But, and that's, we can get more to Moe later, but he had, based on what you said, he had a pretty good first period, it sounds
like. Yeah, it was a great first period.
So in the second period, then, Michigan finally does get on the board. I wrote this down as the beautiful goals because they had two very well-worked goals. The first one was Blankenberg in the near corner hitting Power, who's coming down on sort of a rush or just stepping down from the blue line in the middle of the slot. And the pass is, I think, not great as it's kind of between his skates, but Power is able to not only handle it well, but get it onto his stick and dish it to Kent Johnson, who's flying down the right side and hits it in stride and finally beats Mo. And Michigan finally gets on the board 1-0 in a game where they probably could already have had two or three.
Yeah, that was sort of after the first period. You're thinking, well, if they just keep doing that for the rest of the game, they're going to get some goals because it's just Wisconsin is not even close in these games right now. And that was pretty much the culmination of it. Just passing to rip it apart and finally get the chance you need.
And as we're all taking notes and tweeting about what just happened, I didn't even see the specifics of it because, well, you're trying to do your job to a certain extent. And Wisconsin gets a breakaway. I don't even have it written down who got it. It was just someone was in on Portillo alone. And you're just like, what? How? We literally just scored. Is this off the faceoff? Or we're not even, was no one even taking the draw? And Portillo made a very nice save, 1-0, I believe.
Yeah, and I think that I had noted that it was Karanen responsible. I thought it was not a great game from Jay Karanen, but Portillo came up big in that moment. It looked like a play where the back line just kind of loses a guy behind them, and that was kind of a Wisconsin strategy the whole weekend, was to leak a forward out high in F1 forechecker just waiting, and then to see if you get an opportunity to counterpunch. But Portillo was good there as he was the whole night.
Well, and if you had watched the Western series, and then even what happened on, so it actually bore out well for them, given that they ended up, I believe they got 5 odd man rushes on Thursday after Michigan gave up 6 on back-to-back nights to Western. So if that was a strategy that they employed, I mean, that's a great way to counter a team that is probably going to have the puck a lot. Is they're probably going to get antsy and get going forward. They're going to take chances. And if you take your shot of like, all right, we'll give you a little less defense for the chance you turn it over and spring a guy, it's a good way to even up the game. And it almost worked in that situation.
Yeah, I think it was a good way to scout about it. Scout Michigan as a team.
So Michigan takes 4 penalties in the game. None of them really come back to bite them. Wisconsin's numbers were okay on Thursday. I don't remember them getting any grade A amazing chances that Portillo saved, but Michigan sure did, as Garrett Van Wy picks the puck, I think, at the Wisconsin blue line and comes in on a 2-on-0 with Nolan Moyle, and Van Wy takes a shot, Mo makes the save. Moyle is literally right there for the rebound. He takes a shot and Mo makes a save, and you're just kind of like, where did this guy come from? Like, he's a backup kind of at Minnesota. He'd been there for, I think, a couple of years, and JLF was there and obviously had a great year last year, but all of a sudden now this guy who can't see the net in Minnesota goes to Wisconsin and is putting on a show.
So the thing about goaltending as a theme is that guys who are not particularly great goaltenders can be at one moment in time really good. And that's kind of the story of the NHL and why you have continued discourse about all these goalies as potential Hall of Fame snubs, right? The Mike Vernons and the Osgoods and Barrasso from Pittsburgh, a number of others, is that, like, in the NHL historically, you have goalies who for a 1 to 2 year stretch are as good as anyone in the world, and then they kind of fade. And that's how goalie arcs work. Guys that were not very good just suddenly are. Jack Campbell last year for Toronto, yeah, among others. I mean, Jordan Binnington for St. Louis was a nobody at like age 25 in the minors. And by the end of the season, he was the Stanley Cup goalie winning. So
got a nice contract for it, too.
You never really know where goaltending comes from. It just sprouts randomly.
So after the 2-on-0, Garrett Van Wy then gets another breakaway on a Michigan penalty kill and is stoned on that one. They also get a 4-on-2 that period and can't convert that into a goal. Bo was just not what his numbers said he was going to be. I mean, his numbers were good or fine, I guess, but he was, you know, an eraser, at least for the better part of, you know, a period and a half or so. Michigan does get him late in the second period with another really sweet goal. You had Beniers and KJ go double diagonal and then hitting Nick Blankenberg in front of the net. He goes forehand, backhand, and lifts one over Mo. It's 2-0 at that point, and it wasn't over, but it felt pretty much like it was.
Yeah, that felt like the ending.
Into the third, it's more or less the same. KJ and Beniers had a really good look, and Power tried to go back door to Duke later on, and Duke is sitting there pretty much at the back post alone, and the puck hits just a Badger, I think, in the slot and redirects in. And it's sort of the third goal that Jared Moe has no chance on. And I think they originally gave it to Luke Morgan, which I was trying to figure out if it like went off of him, but he was so excited afterwards and skated right over to Power. I was like, well, that's probably not his goal, but they ended up giving it to Power later. Not really a lot of skill in that, but yet another point for Owen Power, who's putting together at least a really strong offensive campaign.
Yeah, it was a really good game from Power, no question, and taking assertiveness in the offensive zone and made some good passes in this game and got rewarded with a goal there.
So Michigan had, I believe, 23 shots from the house in that game, which was, I think, a lot.
Yeah.
The one thing that was a little disconcerting is they also gave up 20 from the house. And I think that speaks a little bit to the skill or lack of skill at Wisconsin, is that they got a lot of looks. And if you remember from a few years ago, Michigan had years or parts of years where they would get a lot of good chances. They just didn't have any finishers, and so they would never get that many goals. This year, they have finishers, and Wisconsin does not appear to have as many of those.
That number, you know, just feels a little bit high because a lot of those shots ended up not really being chances. Just in terms of like if you were watching the game, right? Like yeah. It was sort of like, yeah, okay, that might have been from close, but you never thought that was going in because like the shot was bad or whatever may have happened in that context. I mean, it felt like a very one-sided game, pretty much wire to wire.
The only other thing that of note is that there was a bit of a brouhaha late in this game where I don't remember who got hit, but there was like a scrum over. I couldn't really see it very well because it was on the boards of where I was sitting. And so you kind of stand and looking up and down, and it was at the other end in the corner, but there was I have melee scrum fight written down, and Lambert and Donovan, I think it was a cheap shot from Donovan, but they both got into it and I each got ejected. Did you have a better view of it, or did you have was there an explanation that you had that I didn't get?
No, I was only sort of half watching at that time.
I don't remember
exactly what I was doing right then, but suddenly I looked down and looked back up and suddenly it's all going on. It looked like on the replay that I saw, they were just kind of standing there and then something was being said. And then, a guy starts pushing and it just kind of boils all over. There wasn't a massive hit or something that had, like a dirty cheap shot that had, brought it all to blows.
Donovan and Lambert both ejected, but they both played the next night, so it couldn't have been anything that was too terrible, as they both were able to come back. So we both had a little bit of different takes on Jay Caron, and this is an interesting thing that we should talk about quickly. So most of the things I saw were previous to what you're going to refute, but I thought he was decent in zone, like on a man on defense, took the puck away from a few guys, played the body really well, went to the corners, created a space for an outlet pass. That was mostly in the first part of the first period. You said that he gave up a couple odd man rushes. The question is now Michigan has rolled through all 7-8 of their defensive options. Do we have any best guess as to who you like so far as at sitting on that third pair?
So the Karenin thing, I was talking about my issues with that on the Friday show, and then Brian comes in and he's like, "Well, they're playing this way, and the defensemen go up on the play."
Wait a minute. Is that your impression of Brian?
No, that's not my impression of Brian. That's just a voice that's distinct from mine.
But it went deeper.
Well, yeah, because I do that as like the voice other than mine, unless someone has like a clearly high voice.
I see. Okay. All right. I'm sorry. Continue.
Yeah. So anyway, and I'm like, well, yeah, I know that. We talk about that on the show. Like, this is the way they play, and I'm not opposed to that. What I am opposed to is when you put players in the lineup who don't really give you a ton of offense, mm-hmm. that can't be happening, where they're giving up odd man rushes, right? So yeah. If you're playing this system and you're operating in this manner, you expect your defenseman to give you something. And so you ask guys like Triscott and Karinen, who are not like the super offensive guys, not the high drivers, that, okay, you can step up on some plays, but you have to be on the back line. And so for me, when you have Karinen in the game and he gives up three odd man rushes in one night, and you've got Ethan Edwards in the press box, that's a problem. Because if you're going to have someone giving up three odd man rushes, I'd rather have that player have a more of an impact offensively.
Yes.
I'm willing to take the trade of offense for defense if that person is giving you offense. And, you know, Karinen was once a forward, but is not anymore. And just doesn't really have that pop at the NCAA level.
Yeah, no, I agree. I thought he was, when in the zone, he was good. I did not see the things that you saw in terms of like getting caught in transition, and you very well could be correct in that sense. And so that is an issue if he is a third pair defenseman. They've rolled through a number of guys because they went back to Edwards and Person this weekend too. I think it's pretty clear that Truscott and Hughes are on the second pair, and now you still have like four guys that are, I don't know, getting shuffled through.
Yeah, I think at this juncture, and this is the shocking thing that we would not believe we would be saying, is I want to see Keaton Pearson as a regular defenseman.
You do?
Yeah. I would just prefer at this point, your top four is your top four, and then I just prefer them to go with Person and Ethan Edwards.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily against that. I still haven't seen a lot from Summers that makes me super excited when I see him in the lineup, but I would probably agree. They did an interesting thing on Saturday, and then we'll take a break right after we say this, but where they skated Karinen as the 13th forward, and he rotated back on D once Blankenberg got hurt. That I was actually kind of like that idea, because then you have a flex guy that can go back and forth, and Michigan doesn't really have a 13th forward that I need on the ice right now.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Okay. Well, that's good. I think you should agree with me more once we get to segment two. What do you say?
One last note,
okay,
by the way, about Wisconsin. Cole Caulfield sent down to the AHL today. Just want to dunk on the Badgers and everyone who picked Caulfield to win the Calder. So you want to
dunk on him before they dunk on us in the second segment?
Yeah.
All right.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
It's a roller coaster. Can't lie and won't.
So the last thing that I wrote on Thursday night before leaving Yost was that it was a good performance. I thought Michigan did a number of things well aside from odd man rushes and maybe a few too many shots from in close. But they needed to repeat the performance. And that's something that we sort of drummed in during last year, where they would win some Friday night games, even in the second half of the season, and then just couldn't finish the job. And that's part of the maturity of this team that we were hoping for, getting everybody back and not, and basically having more or less the same team outside of a couple of players and probably getting upgrades from the players that they were bringing in, is to just be understanding of how to finish these things. And that didn't happen on Saturday for sort of some of those reasons. They still played well in some ways, and you could argue that they did things well.
Well, they didn't happen on Saturday because they didn't play the game on Saturday.
All right.
But
That's funny. Ha ha. You get the joke, Alex. Yay. You can write that down and blah, blah, blah. But on the Friday game, whatever, they didn't slam the door.
Well, I will note that Wisconsin made adjustments. And that's okay. An important thing to kind of point out here. So Wisconsin decides that was a disaster and we can't do that again.
Probably a good idea.
They go to the very underrated component of what brought scoring down in the late 90s. Everyone loves to talk about, oh, now guys can skate and now the goalies got supersized and you know, all these different points, the neutral zone trap, et cetera. The other thing that really helped that was that referees decided that you can just like hang on to really good players now. And that was like an integral component of late 90s hockey. There was this thing on Twitter last year. It was, I don't remember who it was. Might've been Mario, might've been Jagr. Don't remember exactly, but it was, you know, a legendary player from the 90s. Maybe it was Lindros. I don't remember. But anyway, it's this clip of like, look how strong this player is. And you're watching this player like skate to put the puck in the empty net. And the opponent was Mark Messier. And Messier is just like hooking him and grabbing him and whacking him with the stick and like got him wrapped around. And the player still scores. And there's no whistle.
And like there's no like a penalty. Devin Bush tackle.
Yeah, there's no penalty upcoming. And it was like it went viral because it was like encapsulating what the late 90s really was. In that suddenly you were just kind of allowed to more or less impede as long as you didn't make it like the most flagrant. And what Wisconsin did really, really well in this game is they did 95% of interference on every play, but not the 5% that requires you to get called. So go back and watch the tape. Every time Michigan enters a zone, any player who doesn't have the puck, there's a Wisconsin guy who conveniently runs into him. You know, just barely, just brushes him, just kind of knocks him. But Wisconsin did a really good job kind of standing around the protected area around their net. And if any Michigan guy tried to come near it, you know, just kind of stick the elbow out, you know, get in the way, sort of stick a knee out.
Do you practice that? Like, is that something you can practice?
Yeah, you can practice that.
So you just like run a scout team and then everybody just, all right, find someone to sort of hit, but not really?
I'm not too big on the particulars of how exactly, yes, but it is a strategy. And so Wisconsin does a great job. And that's why, like, late in the game when Michigan falls behind, well, so number one, Wisconsin takes the lead. And after that,
we'll get to that. I just want to talk about
after that point, they start just going into the turtle shell. Yeah. But they're not doing the turtle shell where they're just standing around the net.
Blocking all the shots.
They're doing the thing where they're positioned well and then impeding any Michigan players from getting sort of past that. And the game, especially by the third period, turns into, you know, hockey is wrestling, right? Where Michigan starts getting really mad and starts kind of trying to hit back. And then, you know, it spirals from there.
Like early 90s NBA.
Yeah. No, late 80s NBA.
Late 80s NBA. Yeah. All right. Yeah. The first thing of note in this game is that Jared Moe had a huge performance on Thursday night, and on Friday, not Saturday, Cameron Rowe starts. I mean, the plan was probably to start both of them, but like, I don't know, if I'm Jared Moe, I'm like, dude, I just played the best game of my career. What are you doing?
Yeah.
No? Especially Rowe has the numbers that are kind of like, woo, this year.
Yeah, I understand why he would be frustrated, but a lot of coaches have their tandem. And this is who they're going to roll with, and they're just going to rotate them until it's very clear that one guy is better. And Rowe played really well last year, and I think it's a little early to jettison him.
Well, no, but you would just be like, hey, all right, you pulled that out of your butt. Do it again.
Sure.
But anyway, so the first thing, Michigan gets an odd man rush like almost as the game starts, and Powers backdoor being the fourth guy in to make it a 4-on-3, and he just – like the puck gets through him somehow and he can't tap it in. And it was a little bit of like an omen for kind of how the game was going to go. But pretty soon after that, Hughes just gets whipped in his own zone. I mean, I don't really know how else to say it, but he's in decent position. The guy goes by him and then gets in on Portillo. And I think almost accidentally scores because he tries to go across, like he's coming in from the left to the right, and he tries to go, I think, backhand to forehand, but the puck like hits his part of his stick or his skate or something, and then it looks like he reaches back and goes backhand as Portillo's going with him across the crease, but he doesn't because he doesn't bring his stick back, but the puck still stays there. It was very weird and just kind of slides into the net for Wisconsin's first goal. And in some ways, you're kind of like, well, yeah, that's how they would need to score. But the problem in this case is, like, you know, Hughes just got beat straight up.
Yeah, that's going to happen. I mean, that's, I guess, right? That's what we know about Luke Hughes and his scouting report, is that
yeah,
kind of the player he is, and you have to live with it.
Is that more like, but that's in
and
zone.
You hope it gets better as the year goes along.
But that's a very different thing from sort of what happened last week against Western, where he's trying to skate the puck out of the zone and he gets picked, or he's trying to hold the puck in on the power play and it gets ripped away and it's a breakaway.
No, that was definitely on the scouting report, was that a lot of people felt that he's improved as a neutral zone defender, but that the defensive zone is a major issue. And it's probably a good thing that it hasn't popped up yet until this point.
Okay. And it's good that it pops up in October and not in
I mean, it's something you want to see him improve on as the year goes along.
I also thought that Michigan's defense overall was not as great in that opening period as they struggled a little bit with clears and putting passes together in their own zone to get out and turned it over at their own blue line. I don't think it was one particular person or two or three. It happened three or four times, and Wisconsin got a few nice attempts on net that way. I mean, Portillo made the saves. He made every save you could expect him to make, I believe, in this weekend. We didn't mention that in segment one, but well, he had a shutout. And so we may want to tip it to him that, you know, he got his first career shutout and played really well.
Yeah.
But he played well, I thought, in this period. That one goal was like, hey, your defenseman gets beaten like that, and then the puck bounces off of something as you're trying to go with the guy across the ice. It didn't go between his legs. You know, that
yeah.
I'm not going to point my finger there.
No, I have no issues with that.
I have another note that says he made his third big stop already, and this was still in the first period. So, like I said, when Michigan had trouble getting the puck out at times, he was coming out and making kind of big saves, not just like the routine, I'm sitting here waiting for the shot.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's I didn't really have any issues with Portillo pretty much the whole weekend. I mean, in this game in particular, there was a lot of issues going on with the defense around him and some bad bounces. That was the first goal. And again, on a later goal.
Yep. And then late in the first period, Michigan has a power play. They don't do a ton with it. Samo had a shot wide, and the interesting part was that Lambert was on the power play instead of Blankenberg. And I was like, what's going on? And there was one other Daily guy with me in the boxes. There's a different event going on that night that they were all attending, but we were kind of talking about, like, did they just, like, sit Blankenberg? But actually what happened is he ended up, I believe Mel said he had a lower body issue that he was working through. So maybe it was actually Harbaugh that said that.
Yeah, it could be anything.
So, but he did not come back.
No,
and that
he did
was,
not.
And that was where what we talked about at the end of segment one, where Jake Arrington being your 13th skater can play on the fourth line or fill in a spot. He can also play on your third defensive pairing if an injury pops up, and it does. The interesting part of that is that it was, I believe, Keaton Person that was slid up to pairing one with Owen Power.
Well, we know that Mel has a lot of trust in him, so it's not super shocking,
not
especially because Person got, you know, a high workload last year being on the top pair.
Entering the second period, it's 1-0 Wisconsin, and finally, Michigan does not get Luke Morgan or Garrett Van Wyen a breakaway. It's if anyone on the team that you want to get a breakaway, it's Brendan Brisson, and he gets in after I thought Hughes hit him with a really nice stretch pass. It might have been somebody else, but he gets in down the slot, and Rowe makes the save.
Yeah, it was the first of several chances Michigan was getting in that second period that just didn't go in.
Yeah, and then right after that, he made another big save that Pasta came in later on as the puck was in the zone, had another good opportunity. Rowe makes another save, and you're like, where are these Badger goalies coming from? Like, this isn't even the guy from yesterday. Do they have a cloning machine like they do for their linebackers?
Well, again, Rowe was pretty good last year, so it was possible that could come back.
Well, The next thing that I have written down is Bordalo had a nice play, had getting down the slot, and another chance, like you had mentioned, that had a chance to tie the game up. But again, Rowe makes a big save. And then the play that we're probably going to spend a little bit longer talking about, where the puck – I think we probably both tweeted about this. I definitely wrote about it. And I think it's like a shot or some instance that the puck is pushed in from the blue line, not at a high speed. And Bordalo is down in front of Portillo late in the second period. And actually, that's a good place. I like to see guys like him and Beniers and Brisson, and especially the centers, but skill players getting back and playing defense. However, Bordalo decides to play the puck while still on his knees with his stick. And instead of clearing the puck out so he can get up or standing up and trying to move or doing any number of other things, just continues to play the puck on his knees. A Badger forward presses him, because why wouldn't you in that situation? Bordalo hurries, throws it off the Badger. It bounces right to his stick, and he skates right in behind Portillo, who there's no way Portillo thought that that was going to happen. And the net is wide open, and it's 2-0 off of probably the worst defensive zone turnover that I can remember.
Well, so a few things happen here.
Many.
First things. Off, Wisconsin goes for a change. So there's only one guy left in the zone. And Michigan very clearly seemed to believe that the threat was over. And
clearly, if you're playing the puck on your knees.
Well, the defense, the number one culprit for this play are the defensemen, who are standing. They are. Okay, here's the issue. They are not paying attention to the play. They're standing off to the side, not watching anything that's going on. Their backs are to the net, and they're standing pointed towards the boards. And so Bordalo decides he has to play it because his defensemen are off, you know, discussing their dinner reservations. And that is what makes the Wisconsin forward realize what's going on, is there's a guy in front of the net playing the puck from his knees and everyone else is standing around, you know, crowd watching. And so he comes running up. Bordalo realizes he's getting no help and panics. And also, you know, this is the one area that I think you could fault Portillo for, is despite this going on in his peripheral vision, is very slow to react to what's happening. And so in the end, you have a player playing the puck from his knees right in front of the net, and a lot of teammates not really paying attention to what's going on. Portillo realizes it too late, and the defensemen, I mean, they barely turn around by the time the puck's in the back of the net. I mean, that just cannot happen. You cannot be standing around not watching the play when there's no other players in the zone. I mean,
I agree yikes. With you about those other things. I don't know that I agree that it's the number one culprit. I do know that they did not give him a proper play, proper or easy play to pass out of it. And yes, Portillo probably should have gotten up a little bit sooner. I just think that if you're going to play the puck from your knees and you're not going to get up instantaneously, then you have to flip it out a lot faster. And even if you just saucer it up in the air and get it out of the blue line and allow you, I don't know, the defense to reset or to get a new change or whatever, but you can't like not play it if you decide to play it when you're on your knees. I mean you just, what else are you going to do? I mean, he could still just like thrown it off of the left boards and had it angle out of the blue, out of the zone, so that even if someone tries to bring it in, the Badger's already like in the zone. He can't. So it's offsides, something like that. You can't wait till the guy's on you.
I'm rewatching the play right now.
Okay.
And
I am not rewatching.
Portillo moves down with his glove to try and catch the puck. He's on his right. knee. He's watching the play. And then he starts standing up rather lackadaisically while the Wisconsin guy is crashing down right in front of him. And
Portillo?
Yeah.
Or Bordalo?
No, Portillo. He's got okay. when the Wisconsin guy comes rushing up, he's on one knee with the other leg at a 90 degree angle, getting ready to stand up. And that's why he ended up standing up right when the puck goes by him and it's too late. And then the other two defensemen, just watching the play again, Ethan Edwards already is looking away when the shot is taken. He turns around and looks and sees Bordalo has it. And he's like, oh, my job's done. And then just kind of stands there. Karenin is the one right in front of the net. And
right.
I don't even really know. He looks and sees Bortolo has the puck, and then again, he's just got his back to it, and the Wisconsin guy skates right by him, only about a foot away, and then he turns around and is like, wait a second, was that a red jersey? And then by the time he actually looks at the play, it's in the back of the net. I mean, it's just, it's two defensemen who assume the play is over and assume that their forward on his knees in front of the net is a sufficient solution to this play.
I'm not trying to absolve either defenseman because you can't do what they did either. And that's going to touch something that we'll talk about in a minute that I want to go at a little bit more, not you, but same with Portillo. I'm not trying to absolve his lackadaisical attitude. I'm just saying that when you're the guy with the puck, you decide to play it, because I think he also could have gotten out of the way and Portillo would have just frozen it or tried to play it or whatever. When you decide to play the puck, you can't sit in the slot on your knees and then hold it till the last second till someone charges you. Like I said, you could saucer it out. You could throw it up the boards on the left side, because I don't believe anybody was there. And then even if a Wisconsin player picks up in the neutral zone, the guy who's charging in is going to have to leave before he can come back as well. So if you decide to play the puck in that position, you can't just sit there on your knees and wait till you're pressured and then throw it off the guy.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just, going to generally be taking, Bortolo's side in this situation. But everybody had something kind of go wrong here.
Well, and I think that that's sort of the next thing that we can get to, is we're getting a little sidetracked from going through the game, but is that this is the thing that creeps up. This happened a little bit in the Western game. It happened a little in the Lake State game, the second one, the first Western game and the second Lake State game, where sometimes this team does play with lackadaisical attitudes and does play like they're the most talented team in the country, and making fundamental plays with urgency is not always something that you can expect.
Yeah, it definitely was last year, and that's why we kind of have to play out this season and see if the trend continues.
I mean, I hope it doesn't continue. There's no reason for it to. I mean, this could come. I mean, we talked about a little bit, like this is becoming a coaching thing, I think. It also is just like, you know, you got 7 first round picks. These guys are going to the league, and they're going to the league really soon. You have to play like you want to play hockey, I guess. That's the part that I don't really understand is just, you know, what else are you doing? I mean, what are the reasons for not, you know what I mean? I mean, like, goals like that there's, like you said, I ripped Bortolo pretty hard for that, and I think I was fair in doing that. You mentioned Portillo, Karen, and Ann Edwards, and you were completely fair in doing that too. I think in this situation, we're both right, and now all of a sudden, how did 4 guys just screw up a soft dump in, you know? I mean, in a game that's 1-0 late in the second period against a team that you are better than, clearly, and it ends up really costing them. Because I think if they don't give this up, they do end up scoring later in the game, but it's very different. And you could just see everybody's face. I mean, you could see Bortolo, you could see Portillo, you could see the two defensemen were just deflated after this, because it was yeah, completely unnecessary.
It was definitely because Wisconsin had already been slinking back before that, and then now you go down 2 goals, mm-hmm, and you're like, oh boy. It was not going to be good to go down 2 goals anyway with the way Wisconsin was committed, but then to have it happen like that is just bad.
And it didn't feel like it was over in the context of, oh God, Michigan can't score 2 goals or even 3 goals and win, because we've seen them do that, and that's not surprising. But it kind of felt over in the sense that if you're going to have these sorts of breakdowns and just mentally check out, I mean,
I wouldn't read too much into this overall, just because this is a peculiarly disastrous single instance that probably isn't indicative of much of anything, because you just don't see this kind of thing happen on the regular, right? I mean, it's kind of like when Patrick Stephan put the puck wide of the empty net and then the other team went right down and scored. Like, you know, it's just one of those plays that will end up on the blooper reel like forever. And you generally don't expect that to happen every week.
But we already talked about how they were a little bit loose in their defensive end earlier in the game. This had happened like in the Western game where they came out in the first game and just looked. I mean, yeah,
It's kind of like using trouble with the snap as like your example of why Jim Harbaugh doesn't win big games, right? Like using more sort of odd, flukier instance rather than more tangible ones to make a rather,
I get what you're saying. I just wasn't also as impressed with the rest of their defense that night.
Sure.
Into the third period, though, Michigan does get back into it a little bit as they get their second power play. And I think this is something you're going to hammer home on a little bit, is that like, okay, what is supposed to happen when the opposing team essentially doesn't let you enter the zone because they're grabbing and pulling? Well, at some point you call an interference penalty because you're supposed to be able to skate freely if you don't have the puck. So that's something that did not happen pretty much at all. And Michigan gets their second power play into the third period. And then we see just yet another highlight reel goal from Kent Johnson, who I guess everybody on this team can score backwards between their legs because it's now happened twice in 4 weeks.
Yeah, that one was pretty nice. I mean, that was like a whoa, hello goal. So,
I mean, this one maybe was a little bit more necessary than Brisson's, because I think Brisson was pretty much facing the net and he just decided to lift his left leg and flip the puck. But this one, KJ was a little bit sort of facing the corner and reached back, and so he couldn't really go back around. So this was not quite as show offy, but still kind of show offy.
It was definitely pretty show offy.
And then so it's 2-1, and then right after that, the next face off, but Garrett Van Wy gets hit in the head.
Yeah,
gets hit in the head with a cross check, and Mel calls a timeout to have them review it to see if he gets hit in the head. And you could see on the board that he gets hit in the head because the replay shows that he gets hit in the head. And yet there's no call.
I don't know what's going on with that. I mean, Chris Dilks was watching the game and tweeted out the clip that was like, it's incomprehensible, this decision they made. And then obviously he's a national guy. So like, that's pretty indicative of, you know, again, I don't know the rule book super well in terms of all of that, but didn't his helmet get taken off too? Like,
I don't remember if his helmet came off, but I know on the replay he's down.
I thought it was his cage, or it might have been his cage that came off, but like
downward motion of the stick that hits him. And even if it doesn't hit him in the head, it hits him in the neck and he's already like down on the ice. I mean, there's no situation in hockey where everyone involved in that who's watching is like, yeah, play on. Like what? Like that's not a hockey move.
And that's kind of the thing, is that like when you're not going to call penalties because you want a more physical aspect, okay, but you have to keep control of the game.
Right, and that's not the physical aspect. That's like a fight aspect. And then so Michigan has a little bit of jump for the next like 30 seconds, 40 seconds, and you're thinking, okay, this is exactly what they needed. And then you get a 2-on-2 coming back into Michigan's end. Power and Person get their sticks on the puck. It bounces up and away from them to a third Badger coming in. He rifles a shot that goes off the dead end or the back end boards. And you call this a Joe Louis Arena bounce because it comes shooting back. And actually, they're lucky it doesn't hit Portillo, because he is turning to watch it go and it comes behind him, between him and the right post, right out into the slot where it actually went through another Michigan defender who was sitting there. I want to say it was Duke, but it might have been someone else, near the top of the crease to an open Badger, and he just fires it into the open net and it's 3-1. And I think that the defense could have been a little bit better there, but that's like just... I mean, you talk about bad bounces.
Yeah. I mean,
have you ever seen a puck come off the boards like that at Yost?
I don't think so at Yost, but
yeah, other places
sometimes. Yeah. I mean, Joe was notorious for that monster bounce off the end board that popped right up. I mean, Lidstrom used to do that where he'd just angle it off the end board to create a chance on the far side. But it's, you know, this game, I think, was emblematic of the issues that are the way that Michigan will get beat this season, right? It's a combination of Referees not tightly calling a game, which allows a less talented opponent to play closer because they're allowed to do some of the things that could be called penalties by different crews. Secondly, bad bounces, which is always inherent in hockey. And third, which is, you know, Michigan getting a little lazy at times and sometimes not being as attentive to details as maybe an older team would be. So this game kind of had the combination of all three.
What it also had was their goaltender bailing him out repeatedly and keeping them in it, which is what Portillo did, as he made even more saves in the third period, including Wisconsin finally figured out how to run a power play and got one really good tic-tac-toe shot off, and Portillo was there. I believe it was with a pad save down on the ice. And then Michigan, like, has a chance. Bordalo and Pasta, I think, had an opportunity down 3-2. Bordalo has the puck in the slot, and he shoots it just wide, but Pasta sitting right there on that post and I think tries to tip it in because at that point he was behind row and net, and he just missed it. And it was just like a bunch of like super close opportunities for Michigan. Actually, we should go back and talk about Michigan's second goal, which was kind of awesome in a number of ways. Is finally, when we talk about Portillo getting out of net and going to play the puck, well, here he does. And then he has a great stretch pass up to Jimmy Lambert, I think, who hits Samo on the other side, who just snipes a laser from pretty much near the dot. And I didn't even see the puck, but it hit the back of the net. I don't think Rowe saw much of it either.
Yeah, that shot was an absolute snipe.
And that's why he was a first-round pick, probably.
That's the stuff that Michigan can pull out sometimes.
Yeah. And so that got it to 3-2. We talked about the Portillo thing. And then, you know, they pull Portillo with 2:40 to go. That's getting to be pretty standard, I would say, right? We're not waiting till a minute, 40 seconds, minute 15 anymore.
Yeah.
Was that early for you?
In a one goal game, sometimes you wait till 2 minutes, but I'm in favor of the argument whenever, generally speaking. So it's definitely better. I mean, you see games from the old days where it's like 25 seconds and they pull the goalie. So
yeah, you don't even have the puck in the zone.
Yeah, and anything beyond that is fine with me. But it was a little bit earlier than perhaps what is custom. Normally, it's now about 2 minutes for one goal and 4 minutes or so for a two-goal deficit.
Maybe I'm just looking at this a little jadedly, but like, so that Michigan ends up giving up an empty netter, but it's not sort of your traditional empty netter where, oh, they lost control in the offensive zone and it gets out. Some guy skates in and scores. The puck is dumped. And actually that is kind of what happened, but the puck hit the side of the net and Power goes and gets it in the corner and he has a couple of guys on him, but he just sort of throws it up around the boards to a waiting Badger who collects it along the blue line and throws it into the net. Is that, I mean, can you do that, or do you fault him at all for that, or does he need to make a better breakout pass to a guy who's probably open considering that he had two guys coming from different angles on him?
Yeah, he needed to be a little bit better in that situation, I think. But I'll say that I think that just watching the way the game played and the composure of the team, it definitely seemed that they were very frustrated at the manner with which sort of their tires, you know, were spinning in the mud and they weren't really getting anywhere against sort of the way Wisconsin was clutching and grabbing, which, you know, in the long run, I think will make the team better because they're going to see this plenty of times over the season. This is the book on how a lot of Big Ten teams are going to play them, right? MSU and Notre Dame will do their usual packing it in thing. Maybe Ohio State will do that too. But certainly teams that don't want to just absolutely trap all the time, like Wisconsin, who normally play open and free when they have players, are going to do this. So,
yep. Michigan sure is seeing a lot of different ways to defend them and a lot of different things that can give them trouble in the last probably, what, 4 or 5 games, I would say. And they're all a little bit different.
Yeah, they all are different looks. And so overall, I think it is good just in the long run to see these kinds of matchups early in the year and, you know, go from there.
Always sucks dropping a game like this on home ice against a team that doesn't have a lot of talent, but I suppose it will happen from time to time.
You're going to lose one or two of these kinds of games over the course of the season. You just can't lose 5 or 6.
I agree. So 4-2 is the final. We'll take a quick look around the Big Ten. I didn't really see much of either of these games. Michigan State and Ohio State split 2-1 to Michigan State and 5-1 to Ohio State. And did you have any notes from that series or anything on those teams? We'll talk about Michigan State in a second to preview them, but I guess they are in a split in Columbus.
Yeah, let me pull up that score. Ohio State won the second one 5-1. I mean, it really seems right now that Ohio State's sort of strength of their team is Jakub Dobish, their new goaltender, who was an NHL pick. I know he had a couple shutouts in their non-conference. And overall, I mean, you look at this weekend, he gives up 3 goals total. Now, obviously, Michigan State caveat applies, but that's the guy they're riding, because if you look at the box scores for these games, it's grim in terms of the way Michigan State is playing, right? Like Ohio State outshoots MSU 29-19 in the one game, 41-15 in the other game. So
41-15.
Yeah. and by the way, the 41-15 game, as you may expect, is the game that Michigan State wins. You know, MSU gets the
lead. That sounds like football, but anyway.
They just parked the bus. So Ohio State, you know, they're going to attack offensively. They got a lot of shots on the weekend, didn't get a ton of goals overall. They got more in the second game, but relative to the amount of shots was not exactly what you would want, but they're going to lean on that goaltender, and MSU is the same team they always are.
Minnesota sweeps Notre Dame 4-1 and 3-2, I think.
Yeah, that made people in Gopherland who were panicking feel a little bit better.
Fewer panicking?
Yeah. I'm not sure what to really make of this in terms of, you know, how good Minnesota really is, how good Notre Dame really is. I don't really know. We just kind of have to wait and see the season play out. I mean, they were both competitive games. Minnesota was up only 2-1 until 2 minutes remaining in the first game that they win, or the second game where they win 4-1. They got 2 late goals, including 1 empty netter. And then the other one was a 3-2 final score. So these were very competitive games. And the third goal in that one was scored with about 3 minutes to go. So this looked like two pretty competitive teams with each other. Shots were 29-29 and 28-24 in the two games. So,
yeah.
You know, might have just been Minnesota thriving in the Mariucci ice sheet. Not really sure. Didn't get to see them, but those looked like two pretty competitive teams. But Minnesota lost some tough games in the non-con, so it was good for them to pull some out.
Penn State goes to Nashville and beats North Dakota, a sentence I don't think I've ever said before in my life.
Yeah, a lot going on in that 6-4.
There's a lot of goals in that game. There's 10 goals in that game.
Well, it's Penn State.
That's true. They will score a lot and give up more, usually, except not this weekend.
Yeah, that game just was wild. you look at the box score in Penn State, they were up 4-3 after 2, then went up 5-3 with just about 4 minutes to go. And then North Dakota scores back. Penn State gets the empty netter to make it 6-4. North Dakota outshoots Penn State 32-23. Penn State getting 23 shots is a little, I don't know about that.
Not what usually happens, but they score on a bunch of them.
So, you know, without seeing the game, you do kind of have to wonder if this was a game that Penn State got a little lucky in, right? They won the goaltending aspect on one end and you know, North Dakota's goalie just didn't do his job because of the total shots. The Corsi ends up 63-39 in favor of North Dakota. North Dakota looks pretty clearly like the better team, but Zach Driscoll for North Dakota allows 5 goals on 17 shots. That's a 70% save percentage. Oscar Audio wasn't great, 4 allowed on 28 shots, but a lot of times you win the game when your opponent puts up like a 71% save percentage.
Thank you, hockey expert Alex Drain, for that.
Yeah.
So Michigan now is going to have a home-and-home with Michigan State. Friday is going to be at Yost at 7:30. Saturday is going to be at Munn at 7:30, right perfectly aligned with the Michigan-Indiana football game.
Hey, they gave the people what they wanted, an opportunity to not see Michigan State play.
Yeah. BTN on Friday, I assume plus on Saturday. So looking at Michigan State really quick, they're 56th out of 60 in Corsi, which makes total sense. They are 19th in pairwise, which I think that after their road split last weekend and they had a couple of wins in non-conference, this team is getting better. They're not a doormat, but they still struggle to score goals unless they're on the power play, because they are 30% on the power play this year, which is a little bit alarming. And they're 89% on the penalty kill, which is reminiscent. It's a good start, but it's reminiscent of that Ohio State team from a few years ago. They have four drafted skaters, although none of them are highly drafted. And Mitchell Lewandowski is having quite a start to the season, although he's only played in five games. He's averaging 1.4 points per game, and they have four skaters that are over 0.75 points per game. So
they have 17 goals in eight total games. I mean, this is still a team that cannot score at all. And
yeah, it's just
40% of their goals are coming on the power are coming on the power play. So this is what you would expect. This is a team that, more than any other team that you will play this season, even more than against Notre Dame, when you play Michigan State, the game totally changes based on who scores the first goal. And MSU scored the first goal in the game against Ohio State that they won, and they did not in the game that they lost. And that's kind of the formula. They do not operate well if they have to play from behind. And if they play from the lead, then it turns into, I mean, I don't know if you remember that game they played against Minnesota in the Big Ten tournament.
Oh, yeah.
Where MSU was up 1-0 until like late in the third period, and the shots were something like 50-10. And it's just
five just an players, absolute siege.
Five players laying on the ice, and Minnesota just, I mean, that was a disgrace. You know, so that's how they play.
I didn't break down their two goalies because they both had similar-ish numbers and they're both pretty good. 2.09 is their team GAA, and their team save percentage is 0.939, which is also pretty good.
I like both their goalies. We saw Pierce Charleston last season a little bit. Yeah. He looked pretty good. Drew DeRitter's had good career numbers over time, and they get to pad their save percentage because they just let the opponent shoot from anywhere. So that's a little inflated, but they've got two good goalies, no question. And the thing I'll say also about, you know, Michigan State, and I think this is a general thing, but college hockey, it's really tough to enter these sorts of weekends and sort of say like this has to be a sweep, because like hockey doesn't normally like work that way, right? When you think about the NHL, like in the NHL, you say, okay, we want to win 6 out of 10 games that we play.
Right.
Over a 10 game period. You're never like, well, we have to win this one game or these two games. And that's what makes the switch from college hockey to the NHL and vice versa so odd in that manner.
Is it you play on days that aren't Thursday, Friday, or Saturday?
Yeah. And NHL teams too lose games that they shouldn't, like all the time, because there's a high degree of randomness and all that sort of stuff. And
sure.
In college hockey, we enter these weekends, we're like, nope, that can't happen. And it's this weird feeling.
And yet it still does.
Yeah.
I don't have anything else about this series. It's after what happened last weekend, I'm getting paranoid. And especially when you're talking about Michigan State, where if Michigan goes, they might win. I mean, last year, they blew them out like 9-1 at Yost. And the next night went up there and more or less got goal lead. And they took the lead late and then gave it away. But that was a tough game that if State gets the early goal, like, I don't know, man. what am I trusting anymore?
Two really good games would feel pretty good, because that would move Michigan to 8-2 over a 10 game span, and that's what you want for the season. So a sweep would be nice.
I agree.
Listening to Michigan HockeyCast 4.5 for Alex Drain and David Nasternak. Next week, we will not be discussing any players on their knees playing pucks in front of their own net. unless it's the other team.